Welcome to this episode of Benny and Randy, your only podcast for detailed breakdowns of the George Lopez Show, episode by episode. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Overkill, joined by Tim. How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing okay. I'm a little bummed that the Bruins game I was looking forward to watching after work got postponed till tomorrow morning, but quintuple overtime is pretty cool.
Well, so it's like in quintuple overtime, and they're like, you just play tomorrow morning, we'll figure it out then.
Oh, no, so the Lightning and the Blue Jackets are playing right now, and the Bruins were supposed to play after, but this game is taking so long that they just delayed it.
I thought the game they were delaying was the current. I was like, guys, this is, like, I'm really fucking bored of this game, but we're gonna finish it tomorrow, guys. No. Yeah, man, we're talking quickly before with our guests. It's, like, real hot, so, like, this past week, I switched to cereal for dinner, which, like, I mean, I'll have cereal for dinner anyway, but, like, just out of convenience and the pure fact, like, I don't want to turn the oven on and stuff, but I don't think you're supposed to have milk every night for, like, a whole week, especially when it's, like, 100 degrees. That's about a bad idea, so, but I actually have some bad news, Tim. We fucked up again.
We're not going to have time.
No, we're not going to have time to talk about the episode of George Lopez where Benny and Randy have been together for 6 months and Angie is planning a big night for them. Randy comes home and tells Benny that they should take it to the next level by moving in together, but Benny is not ready, so she leaves. Then George tells Randy to accept Benny by the way she is, but he dumps her. Benny gets mad at George. Surprising, Angie backs him up. George tells Benny that Randy is going out with her for another woman. Descriptions are too long. Benny gets madder and starts to beat up Randy's truck, but they end up back together. We actually have a really good episode. We're going to talk to one of my current favorite creators, Elliot Rahal, about his current book, Bleed Them Dry, and some other stuff. How you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for the kind words.
No problem. Yeah, I'm excited. We're gonna talk about Bleed Them Dry, which like is a project I was really excited about. The first two issues have been fantastic, and when we're recording this too, I'll do this quick before we get. So I'm gonna put this episode up this week too because what we're talking about, and I'm gonna talk about a poll we're doing, and I don't want to do editing later, but. So I think next week I've seen them, people start to get them, but you did that Dance Gavin Dance Robot's Tale book, right?
Oh yeah, I did beat that.
Yeah, and I've seen it, like, I think I saw it on Reddit, people started to get it this week, although I think it was, like, solicited for next week, but I saw people starting to get it, which is fucking awesome, like, they're...
Oh yeah? I am on Reddit?
I saw on the Dance Devin Dance subreddit, people started to get their copies.
Tight. I'm not going to go look that up after this.
Yeah. I was wondering... So I've enjoyed them for a long time. I think the very first episode of the show, so maybe, I don't know, so that was like 140 episodes ago or whatever, the outro music was a Dance Gavin Dance song.
Oh, really?
But how did that come about? That's like a weird...
It is weird.
Project to be, especially, I mean, they have it, like, they've had videos with that robot, I mean, I guess, but, like, how did you get involved in that, and how do you create a story about a robot who's just featured in music videos?
Yeah, good questions. good questions. I quit this interview. No. All right. So... Up top, like, I was not intimately familiar with Dance Gavin Dance's music. However, I did grow up in the heyday of, like, 2000s emo, right? So, like, I knew Mars Volta, I'm a huge Coheed fan, and, you know, I don't want to say My Chemical Romance is in the same vein, but, you know, it's only a hop, skip, and a jump. And so, like, I knew that sound, and then the reason I got hooked up is because Josh Frankel at Z2. And Josh is, he's a character, man. I don't think there's anybody else in comics like him. He's a crazy person. I think he's such a good person with a kind heart, but he's definitely a unique person. I think he's, I truly have a lot of love for him. He's been wanting to work with me for a while. Dance Gavin Dance, K came into the schedule, and he asked me if I wanted to do it. And then I did. I just said yes. And then I started looking into the band, and I started to discover how... I don't want to say militant, but, like, ardent fans.
Oh, yeah.
They have. The fanship of this band is insane.
So which people is, like Kyle?
Are you a huge fan?
Oh, no. I just discovered they had a subreddit today. I enjoy the music. I can imagine. I mean, obviously, yeah. you write comics and you've written for, like, Valiant and stuff. I mean, we see that currently with, like, Comicsgate's fucking douchebags.
It's insane. But, like, the fans I got from Quantum and Woody pale in comparison to the amount of fans Dane's Gavin Dean's has, which is crazy. So then I got really anxious about it, because then I was like, shit, like, I pick a band to work with fans that actually give a shit, you know. and, you know, I listen to, I would say, most of their music, all of their relevant stuff, and then, you know, they really wanted to do this thing out of this robot, and, like, they have this whole thing with Infinity, and, like, you know, I was reading, I don't know, I'm a spiritual person in general, so we just made it really fucking weird, and we made it, like, a story about, like, redemption and faith. It's really weird. It came together very quickly, but Ian McGinty and, it was the artist. It's great. It was a great project. Just hope that the fans aren't dissatisfied.
Yeah, I think I saw quickly that they were enjoying. I saw that people were talking about it was like lore building, which again, it's so fucking weird. I mean, obviously, coming like you said, people like Coheed who built, you know, CDs around a lore and stuff like that makes a lot more sense when there's comic books. But I don't know, man. Like. I mean, you see that with comics now, just a fandom attached to things they feel like is theirs, and it has to be a certain way, when in retrospect, things can just be fucking fun and cool. But I'm excited to check it out. Again, because, I mean, a fan of your stuff and the way you kind of approach ideas and then attach that to kind of character building, I'm interested to see what you do with, again, a robot in that idea.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, I hope I did something with it. I didn't want it to be empty, so I tried to do my best, but it was really loose material, so, it was challenging. But, ultimately it comes down to just, I don't know, like, you do what you want to do as a creator, but respect for your audience, respect for the characters, respect for the people who have put time into the mythology already.
I mean, looking at your career, coming from Doorman to even the stuff on Valiant or what is it? Oh shit, there's like a thunderstorm. Hopefully that doesn't pick up. The Vein. And Midnight Lair, Midnight Vista, Hot Lunch Special, like all kind of ranging in topics, but I think you do a great job of exploring kind of bigger narratives tucked through like the lens of character introspection. But then I think again, Bleed Them Dry seems like an interesting project as well, like because it's through an idea from I'm gonna butcher this, Hiroshi Kiyozumi?
I'm not intimately familiar with the pronunciation myself.
Yeah.
So we'll go with what you just said.
But was that similar? I mean, obviously, I would imagine that was more fleshed out. I mean, how was that, again, kind of the approach to story building coming from it with an idea from someone else and then filtering it through kind of your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, with Bleed Them Dry, it was a process, like, there's, like, Vault, like, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, it was like, hey, we've got this crazy thing, we want you to do it, and I was like, sure, and then, like, a year later, I find out what the crazy thing is, and Hiroshi comes with the idea of ninja vampires, right? And, like, you know, it's like doing any other licensed book, you know. Mm-hmm. The only difference is that we're starting from ground zero, you know. So there was a lot of creation element to it, but it's still like, you know, the goal was still to treat it like a license and honor the creative impulse that came from it.
Was that something as well, like, with your previous work, The Vein, which had featured, again, vampires, but kind of like in a filtered, like a heist story. And this, essentially, again, vampires, but very much about kind of the future, and then obviously this, like, procedural type story as well. Was that something, your familiarity with that? Had you been working on The Vein come to this, or was that kind of in conjunction?
This is just unfortunate timing, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, the way Oni Press works, and it's great to be working with them, but the way they work is that they want a significant portion of the book finished before it's ready to go, and then they have their whole apparatus. And so I had pitched the Vein a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and we just finished it up about 3 months ago. I mean, there's still like letter passes to look at occasionally, but like, it's done. And then, like, now we're putting it out, and it just happens to coincide with this. I'll tell you, it's a totally different, the books, aside from having vampires in them, have zero relationship to each other, especially in terms of the way vampires work. The way vampires work in Ninja Vampire and Bleed Them Dry, like, I don't know, like, we knew, like, you know, Adrian and I worked really hard on this, and we built out a lot on it, and we knew that, you know, there's going to be a certain section of comic book readers who, when they hear the book title or when they know what it's about, they might roll their eyes, you know. And we really wanted to work hard to prove them that, like, this is actually, like, this is going to be really good, you know. And then with The Vein, I mean, The Vein started, was inspired by a joke I read on the back of a popsicle stick. And and then I kind of ran with it. And it's just a totally, it's more of like a Lost Boys, Thelma and Louise type thing about, like, eternal youth, whereas, like, Bleed Them Dry is more about, like, sci-fi and, like, you know, reality.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so impressive about, well, the first and second issue as well, but the first issue, like, I mean, a lot of this solicits, and obviously kind of the, like, tagline or the approach is, like, ninja vampires. Like, it's an easy thing, I think, to,
like, get you in the door.
Yeah. But, I mean, the issue is, I love the way it's structured. I love that it, again, is like a police buddy cop procedural, like, set in, like, this far future with vampires. And again, it's not like the approach isn't, again, there's vampire, like, they are, I love that it is, you're dropped into a world where obviously they are, it's commonplace, not even more so, like, you're dropped into, like, a mid investigation. Like, I love that there's no, like, setup to that. Like, you're already, like, there's already a vampire hunter, someone killing vampires, like, everything is, like, you're just dropped into the middle of it, and you just progress through that. So it's really, like, a, if you go in expecting that, and you guys take that, and then kind of, like, flip it on its head, I think it's, like, in a really amazing first issue, and I think it's well-paced in that, getting them, like you said, people in the door, but really then kind of selling what this series is. I mean, was that for your guys' kind of approach to the first issue, to have that?
Yeah, I mean, well, like, we, you know, Adrian and I built out all of, like, the initial lore, and then the lore, and then I started changing things a couple of months later, but that was different, and we'll talk about that later, but, like, you know, we did this huge pitch process with Hiroshi, where it's like, what is this going to be? You know, and we did it 5, 6, 7 times to really make it specific. So we knew what we wanted to do. We knew we wanted to put this in the future. We knew we wanted to do sci-fi stuff with, like, you know, it's set on this island called the International Republic of Displaced Peoples. And, like, we just wanted to, like, you know, focus on that. But then when it comes to storytelling, man, listen, I love having things explained to me. I really do. I really enjoy that process. However, it's not a fun thing to read. Like, it's not, it's like, I don't know, it's like reading really hard sci-fi or reading really hard high fantasy, where there's always that chapter where they explain to you how the world works. And it's just like, let's just learn that stuff along the way. Right, because there's not enough time in a comic book to do it effectively. I'm not a good enough writer to make it interesting. I'm not Jonathan Hickman, you know. And then also, it's just like, I don't know. It's more fun to learn along the way. It's more natural, you know. I don't know. It's just, it was a personal choice. An editorial in Hiroshi agreed. It's just like, I don't know, having 3 or 4 pages of, like, where they came from and, like, all this stuff, like, and what's going on. Like, that all works, and I'm sure it could have worked fine, but it's boring, you know, and I didn't want to do it.
Right. And, I mean, again, I mean, it keeps the pace of the issue, which, I think is fantastic, but also helps to kind of build these characters. Like, it helps you ingrain yourself with them, which, I mean, obviously, issue 2 is out, so spoilers for issue 1 if you haven't read it. Hopefully you have, because, again, it's fantastic. But you guys have the twist, essentially, at the end of issue 1. Was that something you knew issue 1 was kind of always going to end on that, where, I mean, like, reading all the way up to that point, like, I was like, oh, this guy's, like, fucking awesome. He might be the ninja vampire. Like, I mean, you do such a good work of, like, laying the groundwork for who he is and, like, how awesome he is, and then to kind of have that reveal at the end of issue 1, but then also the reveal of our other, like, protagonists to come in. Like, you guys do, like, such a great end, like, cliffhanger for 1. Was that something you knew you wanted to hit early on? Are you writing the story kind of, like, beat to beat and then filling in issues, or is it a lot of, like, kind of what works and then you and, like, you guys working as a team to adjust around that?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I am pleased to hear that you found the end of issue 1 a surprise, you know. I'm so close to the material at any given moment where it's just like, is this actually going to be a surprise? Like, will people actually be surprised by this? And it's hard to see past that just when you're on the inside of it. But, I mean, listen, it's storytelling. It's comics. It's action. And it's just like, how do we flip expectations? How do we flip the script? How do we make this interesting? And how do we propel the story? And it's just flipping the script. Like, you know, I don't know. I just don't want people to feel bored, right? And so, like, I'm always trying to find a moment where we can flip the script and we kind of settled on the end of issue 1 being the real story of the book, you know? Or not necessarily, but just, like, subverting all of your expectations and like, I don't know. We did it all on purpose, yes. I will say there is a lot of beat-to-beat writing in the moment, but every emotional arc of the every single issue and every, like, important plot point has a, you know, we thought about it.
And again, I think you do like a great job of kind of something me and Tim talk a lot about is, you know, understanding tropes when you're writing and then taking that and either being able to subvert them or use them to your advantage and kind of build that into the world building. But one of my favorite, like, I guess, tropes, but like you get to do is the, I love any scene where it's a captain yelling at two detectives. I think any book with police procedural needs that scene.
No, it's always there.
Yeah, and I like that you call it out, too. Like, it's like, oh, we're going to get yelled at, and, like, cut to them getting yelled at.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, tropes are tropes for a reason. And in a comic, you know, they help you or help a reader. I mean, they help a writer and they help the reader at the same time. And, like, they help the reader. It's like, okay, I know what this is, right? Like, I've seen this before. Like, I'm familiar with this relationship or with this scene or with this whatever it is. And then as a writer, you're thinking the same thing. And then as a writer, you're thinking, okay, now what can I do that is actually kind of unique in that space? Or not unique, but what can I do that just subverts expectation, right? I don't want to say the word unique, right? Like, but subverting expectation within that space.
For you guys, you mentioned like the process of world building and kind of carrying out that. Again, it's an appealing series in the sense there's a lot to kind of chew on, and not only the worlds. Again, there's vampires, there are people living amongst them, but also then when you're introduced to, I'm gonna blank on the name, what is his name?
Harper, or?
The vampire killer.
The Slayer, Toya.
Yes, Toya. His story differs. He's from, you know, the past, and essentially then, though, he has his own world he's coming from where, you know, the vampire's history is different. Is that something you guys are obviously mapping out a lot to, I don't know, I think, I don't know if readers have this always expectation, but again, like, you have someone, you know, I like that her reaction to becoming a vampire is that kind of specific reaction, and then because she lives in a world where that's going on, but he has a whole different perspective of his timeline and everything like that. Is that something you guys take into account when you're building out the kind of like character sheet or like who these people are and how they may interact with each other or their kind of, yeah, I guess, perception of each other?
I don't know. This is just a thing I put in my work a lot because I'm obsessed with it. And just what time does, and how time affects events and history. You know, and like a thing I always go back to is, and this is so weird and out of left field, but like the Roman invasion of Gaul, right? The famous Julius Caesar conquering France, if you're familiar with it. You know, our history books write that event as not a glorious, but as an impressive conquest, as a the conquering of Gaul is oftentimes more telling about the story of Julius Caesar than it is about the conquering of Gaul, right? You know, the conquest of France is telling you more about Caesar. But in reality, you know, it was just genocide, right? Like, it's literally just a genocide. And had it happened in a modern context, we would be calling it something else, right? And like, all it takes is you to win and enough time to go by, and you know, history's different, right? And as I've been writing that story, or Bleed Them Dry, and then considering the events that have occurred in the past 3 months, and especially since this is, as you said, a police procedural, you know, definitely, and you're going to start seeing it in issues 3 through 6, some inspiration of the moment that we're living in, you know, because I live in Minneapolis, and obviously the city, along with the entire country, has gone through a considerable amount in the past 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always, I mean, even I recently was talking to my wife about, like, I mean, the idea that, I mean, you look at Hawaii, which is, you know, America's, like, vacation spot, like, it's this cool little, like, state that we have where people go and surf and stuff, and we just took it over, like, it was, and that
not
was...
not even 100 years ago, too.
Yeah, it was, like, not even that, like, it was, not you know, the last long. One. And
not only that, but it was an independent, it wasn't even just, like, and I'm not saying, I'm not excusing this or whatever, right? It wasn't just a bunch of islands where people were just living there with no government, right? It, like, was, like, a government. It, like, right. had its own thing going.
Yeah. But now it's just a cool place to go hang out. But, yeah, it's interesting. And, again, like, the perspective of the people who live there versus, you know, ours versus the descendants of the people. Because, again, it wasn't that long ago, but the stories, like, you can tell out of the people who have come for that and passed down, but it's a really interesting thing. And I think, again, building that into this story, which as a writer, is that something, I mean, we joke, like, the idea of it being, like, you see a lot of it was, you know, ninja vampires, vampire, like, that thing, but then coming into the story, it is a layered and deep and built out story. Is that something you take into account when readers are coming in based off solicits and the idea of it, and then knowing what they expect and kind of working that into the issue? Because there's not, I mean, like, there's obviously swords and stuff, but there's, like, you know, it's not like what you think of ninjas. I think it's more,
I mean, listen, you got to deliver on the fucking gimmick. Yeah. And, like, it would be dishonest to throw up that gimmick and not deliver upon it. Now, I will admit, like, the first two issues, I try to give people the ninja vampire, you know, brush or whatever. But I am focusing on a lot of, you know, making it a real story. That being said, like, yeah, I'm doing my best to where issues 5 and 6, especially, you know, yeah, you're going to give it. Like, I'm not going to not give it. Like, and also, I want to write it, too. Like, it's fun. But the thing is that, like, good action, you know, action is just high drama, just like horror is high drama. And, like, you know, a real cool action sequence is only cool because you're invested in the story and the characters, right? Like, you know, a good example off the top of my head is The Oath with about Doctor Strange, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, when he's on the roof and he takes his gloves off or whatever, and he's like, let's fucking fight, and they're in the rain. It's only cool because you went on that, you know, four-issue journey. It's only cool because you know who Doctor Strange is, right? Like, otherwise, it's just some fucking old guy fighting on a rooftop with his gloves off in the rain, right?
Yeah, that's a different story, for sure.
It's a different story. That would be a fun YouTube video.
Yeah. I think, too, like you said, kind of the action and all of that, too, is sold, I think, without, it'd be a crime to not mention names. It's a DK Ruan and Miguel Muerte. the art again is fantastic. It's beautiful, and there is a good smattering of full page spreads of this city, which is like just vast and it seems endless. Is that something with the team then? I mean, you guys are kind of coming in with the general idea of it, and you were working to build out the characters and the world building, but as for design, I mean, do they have a pretty free rein when it comes to the design of this world? I mean, we even see like some techno suits, stuff like that. Is it kind of free rein for them?
Yeah, I mean, it's you gotta let people who are better at the job do their job, you know. Like, I have, you know, I obviously wanted to focus on cityscapes and landscapes and stuff like that, and like there are very detailed descriptions. At the same time, you know, I leave room in those descriptions, you know, for DK to have fun. And then in terms of characters, it's like, yeah, I gave him the descriptions for the characters, but then like I let DK do what he does. Like, you know, it's just a give and take. And you know, I like to give, but you know, I mean, as I'm just like, he's gonna do it better than I can do it every single time. You know, I give him my ideas and he does it better, and then that only inspires me for the next run. You know, like, you know, I was familiar with his work coming in, but then when he did issue one, it's like, oh wow, this is incredible, and it like only inspired me to do like more big sort of city scenes, because he obviously like excels at it. And then, you know, Mikael just has colored everything so perfectly.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, I'm familiar with his, some of his work before, but this is like the two of them, it's just really impressive. And again, it's something I think quietly, or maybe not so much anymore, but Vault's both writing and art has been like killing it with books. I know you've worked with that. I mean, what has that been like? I think they're a really interesting publisher. I know was it Midnight Vista? Was no, it was Aftershock.
It was Aftershock. I did Cult Classic.
Cult Classic, that was it.
Yeah. You know, I'm completely biased. I've got nothing but love for Vault and everyone involved at Vault, and then Adrian and Damien. They are huge risk takers, and they took a really big risk on me with Cult Classic, and we worked really, really hard together. And they are advocates and allies, and like, you know, I can't speak for anything else, anybody else's experience aside from that, but their commitment to creators and their commitment to quality is, I think, incomparable to a lot of publishers around today. And I'm just fortunate to be working with them, because I am a crazy person, and they do put up with a lot.
Yeah, they.
So I've got one question, if you're willing to talk about it. Can you talk about your alien abduction?
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, I wasn't expecting that.
I did a little research.
Yeah, I had read that one interview with it, because I think that's related to Midnight Vista as well, right?
Yeah, it's specific to Midnight Vista. Yeah, I mean, I'll just, for your readers, just give a quick recap of Midnight Vista, because I like to frame it within the context of that. So Midnight Vista is a 5-issue series that I did with Aftershock about a boy named Oliver, and it's kind of inspired by a little bit of my own story and a little bit about a really famous story in Minnesota about a boy named Jacob Wetterling, who was kidnapped and abducted and in the 90s, and then recently, a couple years ago. And Jacob became like the boy on the milk cart for the entire state. And
his mom did like so much work for...
Mom did a lot of work, basically started the National Sex Offender Registry.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing work that she's done. And, you know, I drive by Jacob's hometown every time I go visit my mother-in-law up north. In central Minnesota, and they solved the case, and like, you know, really honestly, aside from right now, you know, the feelings of occurring in the pandemic, the last time I had ever felt anything like that was during 9/11, where like there's just this collective sort of awareness or experience that occurred within the state. Like, this is a really big deal with the Selfie's death, and like I can't really put it any other way than that. And then I started thinking about my own experience, and you know, you mentioned alien abduction, and like I call it that because it's the easiest thing to do. I don't actually like know what happened, right? And like I believe I believe something happened, but like to say, you know, what it was specifically, like I'll never actually know. And like I've grown pretty spiritual with this stuff, not in a weird way, but like, you know, we don't know what it is. Like, you know, maybe it's, I don't know. Basically, my stepdad and I went out for ice cream for a couple hours, and it was supposed to only be a 15-20 minute trip, and ended up taking 2.5-3 hours, and he and I have 2 hours of missing time together, and we remember different things, and he remembers more things, some of which are absolutely insane, and I only remember certain things like locks going up and down and stuff like that, but my mother can confirm that, you know, we had 2 hours of missing time, essentially, and, like, it's just a really surreal experience. It's an experience of very high strangeness. And, you know, you want to call it an alien abduction? Sure. You want to call it... who knows what it is? Like, who knows what it is? You know, I mean, like, what is an alien abduction? Are they? Is it actually, you know, different creatures from a different dimension or time and space? Or, like, is this a psychic phenomena that we have created in conjunction with something else with our minds? Or did, like, a wormhole open up on us? Or was I sexually assaulted? Like, you know, like... those are all things that you deal with when you talk about alien abduction, because alien abduction, traditionally, like, I believe they happen, or I believe that the experience occurs. Who knows what it actually is? But at the same time, there are people who go through explicit and traumatic sexual events, and they create, in order to protect their brains, unwittingly or whatever, the defense mechanism of like, oh, what actually happened to you was this, which was this other insane event, and it's a psych. That's a possibility too. Like, all realms of possibility are open. You know, I don't believe that happened to me. But at the same time, when you're having an intellectual discussion about it and exploring it, it's something that, you know, you have to think about and consider, you know. I don't know. It's just it's a really complicated event that is an entirely different phone call, if I'm being honest. But it's a moment of... you know, when I look back on it, it's you know, one of the most important things that's ever happened to me, because it created, I think, within my heart, it created a questioning heart within me.
Is that some? I mean, I know with Hot Lunch you've talked about, and even Midnight, like taking those kind of very personal experiences or emotions like that, and then is that something you use a lot as a writer, taking that in? Even, I mean, is that something like your approach to, like, say, Midnight Vista or Hot Lunch Special, or even maybe The Vein, is completely different to kind of your approach to Quantum and Woody or something like Bleed Them Dry? I mean, do you see a lot more of yourself come through in these creator-owned projects? Or are you able to kind of, you know, pull from that well for a lot of your, you know, personal experiences to kind of anyone you're writing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the old adage, you write what you know, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, and I try to stick to that as much as possible. I think with my creator-owned books, it's a little bit more unfiltered. You know, with Midnight Vista or Hot Lunch Special, which is inspired greatly by my Lebanese family. However, I get really self-conscious about that. So I go out of my way to fictionalize it and make mm-hmm. it as much about the story than it is about my own personal feelings or experience. But with licensed properties, whenever those opportunities come along, I still try to inject as much of that into it as possible. So with Quantum and Woody, it's like I was able to connect to Quantum and Woody because I have a brother. And my brother's perfect. My brother's perfect. Like, my brother is a United States Marine. He's a major in the Marine Corps, and he's a veteran in the war of Afghanistan. And now he's out of the service, but he's still in the reserves and continues to contribute there. And then he's got, like, a daughter and this, like, house, and he works with my father. He is, like, and his, you know, he's got the same name as my father, and, like, you know, he's, like, you know, the perfect fucking son. If you were writing, like, a short story about perfect sons, you know? Mm. And then there's, you know, me, you know? And there's Woody, you know, and it's just like, what do you want to do? You want to go write comic books? Okay, sure. You know, and so, like, I was able to connect to Quantum and Woody on that level. And then, you know, with Bleed Them Dry, I'm able to connect on a couple levels. One, through Harper, which is, like, you know, she's going through an existential crisis when we meet her. We meet her at the beginning of Bleed Them Dry, and she is a depressed person, right? She's not in a good place. And, like, I've been there before. I constantly go through those phases. But also, like, that book is about reality and, like, about how, like, the structures that, you know, even America, per se, builds for itself, they're so big and they're so tall and they're so wide that you think that's what the world is. But in reality, it's just like, no, these are all built idols that can be smashed or ignored or, you know, not, you know, whatever. Like, so, like, I approach Bleed, like, you know, as far-flung as Bleed Them Dry is, like, you know, I'm always trying to put the, you know, and the reason why I do that isn't because I'm a narcissist. It's because, like, it's my experience and I have to believe I'm still a human being, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, you want to put the human element into your work as much as possible so people can connect to it. And, like, you know, that's really all I want at the end of the day, is to connect to people and know that I didn't waste their time.
Do you, and I think what I've, like I said, I've enjoyed most about your work is, again, you seem to take, again, really interesting concepts, and even something like Bleed Them Dry, where it's a concept you're working in with someone else, and then kind of expanding it. You're able to inject kind of very real characters into it, and again, I think that's oftentimes maybe underutilized in the sense, again, like, you can't rely on concepts. Sometimes, I mean, you can, but I think to sustain something, it has to be that. And like in that first issue, I think Holloway is the thing that, like, you get such like a nuance with her. Like you said, she comes across as a professional in the interactions, but you're able to write her in a way where she's full of doubt, seems depressed, and even, like, you know, when the case is solved, like, her initial reaction is that of questioning and like anger, which, like, is very nuanced. Like, it is not, like you said, it's not a, you don't get the whole, she doesn't, like, come out and say that, but I think it's very nuanced, and a lot of that approach, I think, comes from either writing personally or at least being able to empathize or understand people in a way that you're able to write them versus, like, again, what is, I think, you know, someone trying to write, like, a teenage girl or, so, like, I don't know. Like, you can tell when someone is writing a rote script versus, I think, empathetic understanding of people.
I try to be. I mean, teenage girls are very complicated.
Yeah.
you know, I mean, I don't know. I never know how I feel about anything. And, like, you know, nerd culture especially is guilty of this. But, like, it's like, how do you feel about this thing? And it's just like, rank it. Give me a list of all of your feelings. Like, what's the most important, like, this, like, sort of do or die attitude. But in reality, like, everything is complicated. And even the simple things you feel, like, you know, if everything was simple, it would be fine. But it's not. And, like, you know, when you're dealing with complicated stories or complicated politics or complicated events, or even, like, when you're in a fight with your loved one, right? Like, with your partner or someone who you have great respect or admiration for, but you have anger with them. Like, that in itself is a dichotomy, right? It's like, how can you be angry at this person who you love, right? Or, like, or who you have great respect for, and, like, that's complicated. Like, or, like, you know, we're allowed to feel, I know Twitter wouldn't have you believe this, but, like, we're allowed to feel more than one thing about things. And, like, I try to put that into my work as much as possible. With the space that I have committed.
Yes. I mean, yeah, you would think that, you know, a Wonder Woman cover could have a different body type, or, holy shit, that thing was,
wait, what? Did I miss something?
Yeah, they posted, it's like a variant, Tim, right?
Yeah, it's a variant cover.
Was it by a certain guy with a same
no
name?
No, so this was like the reverse, like, a really cool like variant cover for a Wonder Woman book. Oh, can you hear us?
Lost you. I'm looking
still
it
gone.
Up right now.
Still gone.
Wonder Woman cover.
Yeah,
I think
I'm sure
it was, like,
it would come up.
The 84 cover.
Oh, this is cool.
Yeah, so it did not go over well.
Oh, wow, because she's
because she looks like a person.
She looks like a person?
Yeah. But, yeah, so it's kind of that used to that fan
base.
Well,
you know, the only thing I got is, like, okay, the jeans. I just disagree with the choice of the jeans, not in the sense of her being a regular person, but it's just like, put some stars on those jeans.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be in.
I love the hair. Don't get me wrong. This is not... I think this is actually a pretty cool image, actually.
I've been watching a lot of Supermarket Sweep because they put it up on Netflix.
I love that show.
It's so fucking good. And it's like that Wonder Woman would fit in perfectly on that Supermarket Sweep because that's what people... Oh my god. Yeah, I was obsessed with that show.
You know what? Like, fuck people, dude. Like, fuck people so hard. And, like, you know, fuck Comicsgate. I'm sorry if, like, I don't want to, like...
Oh, no, you're
you're not offending anyone.
Like, important. Like, it's just like, yeah, exactly. It's just like, this is cool. I like it. I mean, like, I understand the genes, like, that's just a minor. I would have been curious, but, like, I get what they're doing. I don't, whatever. Like, I think it's, the hair is beautiful, and the eyes are beautiful.
Yeah, I'm not sure, like, I'm not sure that I've never, and we've talked about it, I don't understand the ownership people feel. I mean, again, we do a comic book podcast, which is, like, on the, like, scale of nerdy fuck shit you can do is, like, very high, and, like, I don't understand, like... I've never understood the, like, feeling of ownership of, like... I don't know, something like that. Again, if someone wants to tell a different story and it doesn't suit me, that's fine. Like, I don't care. Like, it's not, it doesn't ruin.
I mean, I don't get it either. I've never engaged with media the way that these people do. I've never engaged with anything the way that these people do, who get all bent out of shape about it. You know, it's just like, none of it was real to begin with. Like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, she's not a real person, right? I don't know. I don't, like, it can be whatever you want it to be. Like, and it's weird that you don't want it to be something that you're not used to. And, like, that's what's more alarming to me.
Do you... I think for, like... maybe so for much for Aftershock, but I think for Vault, they've been able to kind of expand, I think, runs longer. Is that something with Bleed Them Dry? Do you guys have kind of a plan for the initial series, or, like, do you guys have, like, a set run for them in mind, or do you guys, like, as long as people are going, you'll continue to go for the series?
What I know right now is that we're set for 6 issues. You know, and again, since this is a license, I don't know what the future holds. I'll say this, I can't say that either. All I know is that, like, I will bring up the idea of doing more, because I am that guy. But, like, you know, people seem, the response has been nice. This is clear, this is the most response I've gotten over any book I've ever done, even though, you know, the painstakingly personal books. But, you know, the thing with the Ninja Vampires that sells, which is just great. But I love it. I love writing the characters. I love writing that book. There's more I'd like to do. I definitely bring it up, but, like, it's out of my hands. But I think, you know, it did well here, and I think it's, like, there's cool stuff going on over in Japan with Hiroshi, and, like, I don't know. Like, I could definitely see doing more, right? I don't think it would be a straight-up continuation of the series, like 1 through 12. I think you would most likely see another mini series, but I could be wrong. They might pull a Heathen and just do a break. But again, right now we're just slated for 6 issues.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like a world you could play in, and I would be interested in. Again, kind of seeing what you're able to do with that. But like you said, I mean. Was I think the vein is it October 10th, maybe? 14th.
I don't know off the top of my head, and I should, but I don't.
Sorry. Well, and who knows? I mean, at this point, I think Comicology, I'm looking quick, has it solicited October 14th, but again, I'm very excited. The previews for that look, again, really great, and to kind of have a book again with a concept then wrapped in a heist, which, like, I am a sucker for any sort of heist book whatsoever. I will read anything.
I'm excited. It's a fun one. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
And then one thing before, I think, Tim's question, we've been kind of just come asking, especially with people having way more free time of recently somewhat, is has there been anything you've been reading specifically that you've been enjoying?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of Reverb right now.
Yeah, what's with that?
I just read, I just finished all of House of X, Powers of X, which was really fun. Working my way through all of Akira.
Oh, nice.
Reading some fiction books right now. Just picked up a random one called Mechanism. Going through some old comics. Also trying to stay current on my new ones, but, you know, the comics are expensive, and COVID has got me a little bit more conservative. However, I do buy as many books to support my local shop as possible, but I've been mostly focusing on trades of series and building out my bookshelf, but what's coming out right now... really enjoyed. Yeah, I mean, I was of the Marvel stuff. I was consistent with Hulk. What's the fucking Hulk?
Immortal Hulk. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's been great.
Yeah. And then I was consistent with Batman too. I got to catch up though. But yeah, that's I'm right now. I'm kind of on an Akira binge, and I was on an X-Men binge for a while, and then I gotta pick back up and catch up after Hoxpox. But you know that I finished it, and I know I'm a couple months late to the party here, but.
Oh yeah, that first we were just on another episode talking about I read that first collection. I bought the hardcover of it and I read it and same like
yeah,
I
bought it. It's so pretty.
Yeah, and I was like, this is fantastic, but I'm like, I want to read the rest, but one, I have no, like, I can't keep up with, like, there's like tons of titles and they're putting out like a trade every month that collects it. So I was like, I'll just wait until this is all together and someone can tell me what order to read it in. And
well,
like,
to be honest, I struggle reading weekly comic books. And I know Hoxpox was released on a weekly schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then to figure out, I mean, again, what they've kind of let him do has been pretty amazing. Like, he oversees all, so like, yeah, once it's all together and it's like, because I think he's even like curating the trades, so like I'll just wait till it's all done and I know what I'm reading is.
I did just read Lonely Receiver from Zach Thompson. That's good.
Oh, I've seen people. Yeah,
and I'm reading the Dark from Jackson Lanzig and Vault, the Dark One.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really good. And then my friend Jeremy Holt, they wrote a book that was,
oh, that's, is it that, oh yeah, it's coming out.
I got it's through Comixology. I gotta find it. It's gonna kill me if I don't name it, but it is really, really good. And that one, what's so impressive about that one is that, like, it's not violent. Like, it's just like a straight-up romance. It's called Virtually Yours. And like it's like a straight up romance, and it's just so good. It's just so good.
For a long time, I'm surprised they haven't got more credit. Like Skinned, was it Southern? Is it Southern? Southern Dog is, and then he's fantastic. This stuff, and I'm hoping this is kind of like the next big thing to get him on some more books, because I think he's.
Well, yeah, and he is good too. His book Skip to the End.
The Kurt really Cobain
good.
Book. Yes.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I bought that. I bought that Akira like hardcover box set, that big fucking expensive thing, and I read the first one and started to say, I was like, there's a lot of Akira. There was way more than I thought there was.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I couldn't afford the box set, but I'm on the third volume, it reads so quickly. You know,
yeah.
It's like you can put it down in a couple hours.
Yeah, but like 10-year-old Kyle who saw that movie was not aware there was like way more. So I was like, "Oh, this is not what I thought it was," but it's way better. So I will let Tim do his final question before we ask you where we can catch you on stuff.
All right. So Elliot, gun to your head, if you were forced to write one episode of The Big Bang Theory, what would happen?
I don't think I've ever seen a full episode of The Big Bang Theory. If I'm being honest, I know Sheldon's in there.
I think that's all you need to know.
It would probably, I don't know, like, instinct to say that like Sheldon just like goes on a killing spree. Right, like, I don't know. There's something. I don't know. Fuck, what? That's a good question. Like, the problem with it is that I just don't know enough about those characters.
What I think is, because this, you know, obviously we ask this, or Tim asks this every episode, is like the people who aren't familiar with it, and like me and Tim are tangentially familiar with it. I've seen it through my mom and stuff. But like, I think anyone's guess of the characters is always like 100% on, even when they've never seen the show.
All I know is that one time I was at a Comic-Con in Chicago, that's 5 years ago, and this is when I was very young, and I was like dressing a little bit more formally, but still like trying to be cool, and like somebody asked me if I was cosplaying as the cool sexy guy nerd from Big Bang Theory. the not Sheldon, whoever that guy is.
Who's that?
Leonard.
Leonard, yeah. Somebody asked me if I was dressed like Leonard. And I didn't know what they were talking about. But then and then they told me, and then I was upset.
If anyone wants to, I guess, yell at you about Dance Gavin Dance or anything else, what is the best way they can get a hold of you?
Twitter, Instagram sometimes. Check out my Patreon. And then, you know, if you're nice, you know, I'll give you my email.
The big thing is, that's something we've obviously been pushing. Definitely go make sure you support people on Patreon, like in this kind of new wave of comics. And it's been this way, I think, for comics. I mean, it is a industry where the creator, for some reason, has to do all the promotion for their books, themselves, everything. So that's been a awesome way for, I think, creators to actually get kind of the credit and reimbursement they deserve. And again, I will say, I think this is an amazing book. Everything at Midnight Vista, Hot Lunch Special, cult classic. Like, they're all fantastic books. I'm excited for The Vein, so definitely everyone, it's all available. Issue 1 and 2 are out of Bleed Them Dry, so you can get those. Before I forget, because we're terrible at our stuff, Tim, where are you?
Oh, I write over at Comics Pit, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tim Madeira.
And like I said, I'm going to put this episode up this week because I don't want to have to do a bunch of editing. So I will include that we are currently running our first poll. We're going to be doing a comic book book club live stream. I don't know. We don't know how to live stream, so that should be interesting in September. You can help us pick the book we're going to be talking about. I think the choices are, obviously, we're well prepared. Charles Burns, Black Hole, the Demon Bear Saga arc from Claremont and Sienkiewicz. What is it? Prison Pit, the hardcover collection.
Oh, by the way, sorry. Love, yeah. Sienkiewicz's work with Lemire on The Question, with the Black Label stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's
good. That's... Also, check out Madam Satan from Archie Comics.
And, Tim, what's our other book? Man, we're terrible at our self-promotion.
Oh, it's the Umbrella Academy 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah, Umbrella Academy 1 and 2. So you can go vote on any one of those four, and then that will end this week. So if you're listening to this, it'll be posted on Friday. So this coming Monday will be end. And then in about 3 weeks, we will do a live stream where we will talk about the book, our thoughts, and we'll take questions and all that stuff. And hopefully we figured out how to live stream by then. But that gives us 3 weeks. I'm sure it can't be that hard. I see people do that on YouTube about action figures, so we can figure it out. But yeah, that's, I think, about it. Again, you've listened to the podcast, you know where to find us, at Page and Panels. Like, again, you didn't stumble upon this, so... But the big thing is go support Elliot. Like I said, I can't stress, like, we do episodes because we like the books. So, like, we never do an episode where we don't like the books. But I can't stress enough, like, how good Bleed Them Dry is. So we were excited to have you on. And thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Oh, you're fine.
I really appreciated this. And you guys giving me a little space to be weird.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, we are...
Fits right in.
That's why it's nice when other people talk, so then we don't get... I don't go into a weird...
I just feel silence with noise.
And that's this issue of Page and Panels, and next week we will definitely get back to talking about George Lopez.
Bazinga! Bazinga! Hugging is a...